Thanks for tuning in to today's afternoon concert. I'm your host, Lori Neufeld. KUAC is supported by UAF's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, offering non-credit classes for adults 50+. Spring classes begin March 2nd. Information at uaf.edu/OLLI or 474-6607. Well, as promised, the folks from Drums of Winter are here at the KUAC studios. It's film director Lynn Camerlin and film preservationist Bob Curtis Johnson. Thanks for coming in, you guys, to talk about the Drums of Winter.
Well, thanks for inviting us, Lori.
And Lynn, this film, you guys went out to a very small village in Alaska, Emonak. Thank you. I should have asked before we started. I'm like, I almost have this. Emonak. How did you get interested in Yupik culture and this, you know, what started this journey of filming the Drums of Winter?
Well, both my collaborator Sarah Elder and myself had lived in Yupik communities, and I think our interest in filming and in making records of these communities grew out of that personal experience and kind of the great life changes that brought on. And in the 70s, we set out to make a series of documentaries, of ethnographic films. But the idea had occurred to us that to make a really true record, that what is in the film, the impetus of the film, should really come from the communities, that these would be collaborations, they'd be co-authored films. And we started out doing that in the early 70s. It was a very chaotic process. During that time, Sarah went to Emonak to teach as a high school teacher. And during that time, she became involved with the dancers there. And I had experienced dance in other villages, and we were both so moved by this experience, by the world that it evoked, that we really wanted to make a film about that.
And I hear this film really captures that very well, the feeling and the emotion and the sense of culture it has. And it's the Drums of Winter, and you have a public showing of that tomorrow night at 7 at Davis, and it's the restored version of it.
Yes, the showing is tomorrow night at 7 at Davis Concert Hall. And this is the new digital restoration of this film.
And Bob, can you speak a little bit to that where, you know, seeing it on a big screen is a bigger deal than just watching it as streaming on your phone or even just watching it as a DVD?
You just touched a part of me that, you know, the experience is changing, how people experience film and motion pictures and moving image media. And to some degree, I have a lot of regret that it's becoming smaller and smaller, because something sort of ineffable happens when you put a group of people together in a room with a large image, and everyone sort of falls into that world and all into that experience. And that can't really happen when we're distracted by multiple simultaneous events going on around us as we look at our computers. And so that isn't going away, and I don't want it to go away, but I really want to make sure that we hold on to the value and recognize the importance of a room of people experiencing something simultaneously. There's
and that's
power.
What you get at the theater.
There's power in that, yes.
Yeah.
And this is a powerful film. So, right. And a lovely aspect is, you know, as the way it's structured, the people speak for themselves. There's not an omniscient narrator telling you how to think about this. You hear directly from the individuals. And the filmmakers, Lynn and Sarah, had just the restraint to not put their egos forward and to just allow things to happen, that we just watch people, even sitting still for a moment. And because that's a natural way that people are, you don't feel driven to rush through the process. You're there. You're just there with the people, and it's like a being there at that moment.
Lynn, that brings me to you sent a couple of files over from the film, and could we get a sense of some of that, sense of being there with the people through listening to one of those? Tell me which one we want to listen to, Stanley at Home, My First Dance, or Stanley Waska.
Sure, let's listen to Stanley Waska Teaching. Okay. And this is from a scene in the film where everyone is gathering in the Kuzyuk, the dance house. And Stanley Waska, who is the lead dancer, is teaching everybody a new song, which will be performed at a coming potlatch.
Lynn Kamerling and Bob Curtis Johnson join me here at the KUAC studios, and we're discussing their work with Drums of Winter. And we just heard that it felt like we were there. I think when we're just talking about the difference between watching something on a small screen as opposed to seeing something on a big theater screen, hearing something with headphones on too, as we do sometimes at a radio station in a studio, it really takes you there. And I'm thinking that Stanley Waska did not hand out sheet music to this dance.
No, he didn't. And every year when preparations for the potlatch would begin, people would make new songs. And some of the songs would be ancient songs that, you know, hardly anybody knew the words to. Some of them would be new songs like, you know, how bad the traffic was in Anchorage, and things like that. So one kind of really important thing is that we see the art form growing and adapting, you know, as it's moving forward.
And so you captured a moment in time in this, you were filming in the 80s. And have you been back since to see new dances?
Actually, the first part of this film was filmed in the 70s, in 1977. The film wasn't completed until 1988. And there's a part in the film towards the end where some young women are talking about their belief that this will die out, that it will fade away, that the only thing they'll have left are the recordings that they make with their tape recorders. But in fact, just the opposite has happened. You know, there's been a tremendous kind of renaissance in Yupik dance, different from what it was then, but it's just such a strong proof how vibrant and vital this, you know, cultural art form is.
Well, what you just said, that they bring a new song every year or more new songs every year, that means it is adapting and it is ever evolving.
Yes, yeah.
And telling the stories of the day or
yes,
the year.
Yeah. And in the film, you know, we made this at a time when there were still elders participating who knew this old way of dancing. But now that's really, you know, now young people are involved and young people are continuing and making up their own songs. So maybe that's Drums of Winter Part 2 that's waiting for some young filmmaker to go and do.
Drums of Winter, not yet titled Part One, but could be. You have a showing of it here in Fairbanks tomorrow night at Davis Concert Hall at 7, and also a showing of it at the UI Museum of the North during the Festival of Native Arts.
Yes.
And that's the first weekend in March, March 6th on Friday at 2:30. And what an important time to show that film also, you know, with the Festival of Native Arts coming together of all kinds of Native cultures here in Fairbanks.
We hope that that will bring people, Native people, to see the film. When we showed it in Anchorage in November at the Beartooth Gallery, which is its first kind of theatrical showing, we had, you know, full house, 400 people with a very large population of Native people coming to see it.
So, and what has been the reception?
Well, in a sense, it was like, you know, completing a circle of making this film and its release and its, you know, its life, and then restoring the film and kind of reintroducing it for people to experience again.
I think folks, let me just interject for a second,
Bob.
That we often think, you know, a film's life is the first time it's released and then it's there, and that somehow film preservation is some sort of, you know, rescue effort or emergency kind of a process. And I would go beyond that to say that it's a natural part of a film's life, sort of bringing it to new audiences and keeping it alive, not as a way to sort of lock the culture into where that was at that moment in time, but as essentially a reference point for folks to go and see where it was and see where we are today and consider how those transitions happen and what it was like and what it might be like, you know.
It sparks a discussion, and it sparks more investigation for people, I think, mm-hmm. too. And so through that restoration process, you know, you get more people involved with the film and then more people to see the film,
right.
too.
And this one's never gone away.
Right.
This film has basically been in circulation for, what, 26 years?
Is that the number? And yes. In 2006 was put into the National Film Registry, which I understand is a pretty big deal.
It is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, there's two Alaskan films on that registry, and this is one of them, yeah.
And two Alaskan films on the registry
ever,
yes. Not just that year, but ever.
So what that means, being named to the National Film Registry, is really a mandate for the film to be preserved for future generations. Mm-hmm. And so that is what opened the door to restoring this film.
And the restoring happened very recently.
Yeah, just wrapped it up at the end of last year. And about a year-long effort, maybe a little more than that, in terms of preparation, fundraising, gathering the elements, reviewing the elements, selecting what is the best element. And in this case, we were able to go back to the originals because Len had cared for them carefully, and they were held here in the vaults at the Rasmussen Library in the Museum of the North. And so the materials were there. We only had to turn over a couple of rocks to get everything that we needed for a first-class job. And one thing I would point out for the folks who are going to come, when you do, be looking inside the men's house, the Kosiuk, when they're dancing and when they're practicing. This is an example of how wonderful it is to have the filmmaker. We don't always have that chance, but with Len here, he knew exactly how dark to make the walls, because he didn't want it to be a limbo space that could be a giant room. He wanted us to know and for the viewer to know that was a limited space. Still needed to be dark, but we had to see some detail in those walls. And that's what some of the modern process has allowed us to do, especially in this digital, is to fine-tune that so the viewer can just see just exactly how big that room is while at the same time having a sense of how dark it is and what it's like to be in that place.
Because all these scenes were filmed right there in the village, right there with the dancers. And how were you received there in the 70s and 80s when you were there? How did that work? I can't imagine that, you know, now we have a lot of reality shows that are coming to Alaska, and I'm sure they're even infiltrating, you know, small villages and trying to, yeah, whatever. How did you not create that scene before it was even a scene?
Well, for one thing, this kind of filmmaking is about relationships, long-term relationships. And those relationships that they, you know, develop, if they develop trust, then that opens the door to making this kind of film. So the community had seen our previous film, so they, you know, they knew what that looked like.
Oh, and so they already had a respect for that process a bit. Okay.
And also when we would begin a film, we would go to the community for an extended period of time. In Emonic, we were there for 4 months.
Before you ever started even getting out the cameras and the lights and the recorders, you spent time with them.
We spent time there, and in the dance house, we lit it and went every night, whether we filmed or not. And so over a long period of time, it just became, you know, kind of normal. But I think part of the reason that people invited us to film there also is because they understood about the power of film. Oh. And especially for the elders, they knew that what was going to be there was going to survive them.
Yeah, they had a sense of that. So it was important to them, too.
It was important to them because they knew that that knowledge would... you know, would continue, and it has.
And this film doesn't just show the cultural dances. You have interviews with people from the village also, and you sit down and talk about the importance in their life and what it's like. And
yeah, I think what started to emerge, you know, the film that we made was very different from the film we expected to make. And I think more and more we turn towards the physical kind of spectacle of the dance, more towards the inner world, that kind of emotional landscape of the dance, what people experienced and how they experienced it. And that's, you know, I think where the real meaning is, and that's what speaks most eloquently about the culture.
There's some theatrics that go along with the dance also. There's costuming, that's the right word, right? And there's, you know, there's choreography. Like when we were listening to Stanley Waska teaching, he was teaching how to do this. There's no written down how to do it, but it's all in time and place how to do it.
Right, and then when you see the scene in the movies, he's also demonstrating the motions.
And this is this done more than once a year at the Potlatch? They do this typically more than, is it an everyday thing? Or how is the dance included in
the Potlatch? The Potlatch is a gift exchange with a neighboring village, but the preparation starts months in advance. And then it's every night. You know, people come to the Kuzgek, to the dance house every night. And this practice kind of evolves. And within that practice is just this kind of intimate world of this room and what happens in this room. And was the center of this film.
And it's men, women, children alike?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in a very small space.
really?
I don't recall talking about this, but I wanted to share that an interesting aspect of this is towards later in the film, they ask some questions of youth and elders about whether they think, you know, dance will continue. And this is late 70s when these films were made. And actually, the young people are more pessimistic about dance, and the elders feel convinced of it, that it will continue, at least in some fashion. And that's it's rebounded in ways that might have been unforeseen at that time. The way dancing has recovered and is really such a wonderful aspect of culture now. It's kind of interesting to see that.
And we know that there's some real problems with suicide rate in Alaska, and especially in villages. Do you see the dance being a healing aspect and a coming together for people to really feel part of something?
I think it's that. Yeah. I think it certainly can be that. And for this film in particular, you know, when young people, young Native people, especially from that region, come and look at the film and see this kind of moment in time, this snapshot in time, it's a world that's, you know, basically vanished for them. That's not a part of their lives, part of their past. And, you know, for some people, their relatives are in the film, and, you know, people who have passed away, you know, long ago. So whether the filmmaker gets it right, whether the filmmaker takes the time to get it right, or whether it's kind of a quick,
surface look.
Surface look. Yeah. Is a really, really important thing about the truth of the film and, you know, in the future, how the film is used.
Yeah, we have our what we've leaned to and where our attention spans are these days is 1 minute and 2 minute pieces. And those are good for a surface glimpse at a situation or some quick visuals. But one thing we don't want to lose is the idea that we're unlikely to go very deep and really understand in that period of time. That may occasionally happen, but it's not the norm. And we need to make sure that we refresh ourselves with films like this where we can completely immerse ourselves in an experience, in a time, in a place, and educate ourselves through experience rather than just skimming over the surface like a stone, you know.
Drums of Winter is a feature-length film. It's not just 45 minutes long. It's
90. It's a feature-length film. Yeah. It's 91 minutes.
Nice.
And I think it takes a while for this story to develop because it's a very quiet story. And I think part of the balance with the incredible liveliness and energy of the dance are these other everyday, ordinary, quiet moments, which are almost like a character in the film.
Wow.
And, you know, and as I said, that ordinariness kind of is what speaks most eloquently, I think, about the place.
I think when we think of winter, we think of more of a quiet time. Mm-hmm. In Alaska, you know, the snow has dampened down some of the sound and the crispness of the air and, you know, a little bit less activity and less light. And so we spend a little bit more time quietly by a fire or quietly with our loved ones, you know, and that's winter to us here in the northern climate.
Right.
Some of the most interesting scenes that were complicated to get the color exactly right on, you might think those would be complicated, colorful scenes. They were actually the landscape, mm-hmm. the winter landscapes, because as Alaskans, we know what those need to look like. And the folks that we were working with had to be told because they did not know the subtleties of the Alaskan landscape. And we really had to fine tune those. And it's interesting to think that our world, as simple as it looks, may be more complicated than it seems at the surface.
Yeah, People may think that it's all grays and blacks and whites. It's those gold and those rose colors that are just so subtle and beautiful.
We had some arguments with our digital colorist at the film lab because he said, well, you know, snow, it's white. And he said, no.
Snow looks like.
Snow is not white.
Right, yes, yeah. But we feel great about, I mean, really, we did take the time and we do feel really good about the program as it appears now. We feel very positive for
is not a film in black and white. Mm-hmm. Even though on some of the banners and such, it looks like you have some black and white images, but it's not a film in black and white.
It's not a film in black and white. It was originally done in the film medium, in 60 millimeter film, and this digital realm, the restoring the film in this digital realm, was truly extraordinary because it allowed us to recreate and reveal the best of the brilliance of the original film.
Yeah. higher than high def, actually. Right. And then we have those files, and then we scale those down for what high def is.
Is this something you've been doing for a while, Bob? Have you been involved in Alaskan film or?
Yeah, I moved here in 81. I've lived in Anchorage the entire time, but I've been involved in media and went to work with the Alaska Moving Image Preservation for about 8 years, helping to help people manage collections and to gather a substantial collection. And then I've been doing, I have a preservation business, and this is what we do. And I've been doing that ever since, so probably about 16 years now or something, just in preservation. And it's rewarding. I mean, this is, if I was thinking this earlier, I said, well, what other films would I like to work on? I'd like to work on a couple more of Len and Sarah's films, because they were a very important group in Alaska. And there's plenty of material that needs to be cared for, and one of the things I think is important is to remember is that Len's a filmmaker, and he's a working filmmaker today. He's got multiple projects going. As a culture, we need to step in and do this work, partly so that filmmakers can continue to make films, but that we can reach out to them while they're with us and get their input on the work as we are setting it up for the next lifetime, the next generation of viewership.
Len, what was it like for you to revisit this film after, it was completed in 1988? Drums of Winter was, this completed work, and I bet you were proud at that time to have it finished. And then now to go back and revisit it.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because we were, sitting there with the digital engineer we worked with, Bob and Sarah and I, just kind of re-entering this film on a scene-by-scene level. And it evoked so much of the memories for Sarah and I of making the film and, all of the incidents around it. And we realized we better write all of that down because no one else is gonna know it or remember it. But one of the reasons that, in addition to saving this film for future generations, that we did this restoration was to just create awareness about the vulnerability of our collective visual history. And so much of it is disappearing right in front of our eyes. The photographs and albums under the bed, the VHS videotapes, the film reels, the professional and amateur film, that's all our collective Alaska history. And it's all going to disappear.
Yeah. And we have to take steps to digitize it and have it again for future generations.
And we can't save it all. We all should just accept that now. Yeah. I think an Alaskan would understand the concept. This is basically dip netting.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot flowing past, but we want to intentionally grab certain things.
There's some keepers in there, Bob.
Absolutely, right. And we need to know where that big king is and just pull it out of there. And we need a few of all of it. We need some of those little jacks. And, we need some Dolly Vardens too. We need
great analogy.
Yes. We've got a couple more cuts. I'd love to listen to another one or two of these. Len, if you'd tell me which one, I would.
Sure. The next one we'll hear is Lala Charles talking about her first dance, which her formal kind of coming out, her formal presentation in her very, very first dance.
This is from The Drums of Winter, and Len Kamerling and Bob Curtis Johnson are here at the KUAC studios, and we'll hear a cut from Drums of Winter right here called My First Dance.
When I first danced, I remember it was on a weekend on a Friday. I was in school that day, and I was very excited. I felt really special because the older folks during that day would look at me and say, you're going to be very nice tonight. I was nervous. I was excited. I couldn't wait for the night to come. when our song started, there was a whole bunch of, you know, gifts right in front of us dancers, and they placed a sealskin right in the place where I was supposed to stand. They set it up and everything, and I was all set to go. You know, I had my headdress, my belt, my new dance fans, my new kasbak. And that was the first time I was going to face the whole crowd, you know, like in the middle of attraction. I walked out. Dad brought me out there, and he set me where he wanted me to stand. I felt really afraid. I almost couldn't remember what to do. I guess my uncle thought it was time for me to begin dancing in public. My father, he sort of explained it to me a little bit, and he said that in this way, the first dancer is looked upon or recognized as a member of the community.
She just makes it like we're there with her at that first dance. And she's very fluent in English and maybe in Yupik also?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This making a film is, you know, there's a certain amount of luck and serendipity to it. And in this film, in this particular scene, when Lala and two of her friends are talking about the experience of their first dance, we actually found footage of this first dance.
Oh, very lucky.
When we're in Emonic, somebody said, you know, these film cans you have, we saw some film cans just like this in somebody's fish cache. And we went to find them, and, you know, in it was the work of a filmmaker who had been there 10 years previously, who had filmed the potlatch, Lala's first dance, and sent back a copy. Uh-huh. And there it was in the fish cache waiting for us to discover. So that's definitely a moment of the, you know, the filmmaking gods were smiling on us.
Thanks for sharing that story, Lynn. That is exactly what it feels like. It's like, wow, how could it be more perfect? Well, cannot wait to see the showing, the public showing, tomorrow night at 7 right. at Davis, and it's Drums of Winter. And thank you so much, both of you, for coming in.
Well,
and
thank you for having us, Lori.
Yes, thank you.
You bet. And Drums of Winter shows the newly restored film by film director Lynn Kamerling and Sarah Elder, right, is your co-film director, and Bob Curtis Johnson. Keep on with the restoration process, because it's important work you do.
Thank you. Yes, certainly will.
And you're headed out to Bethel and Emonic and Juneau, too, with this film, I understand.
Yes, this film will be shown this spring in Bethel, and we're taking it back to show in Emonic, where it was filmed, almost 30 years ago, and to Nome in the spring, and it'll be having some showings outside of Alaska as well.
Yes.
Best wishes. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Laurie.